Chairperson?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we do. It's 9 o'clock now. We have yourself, Mr. Ross, Ms. Mlekwa, Mr. McClover, and Mr. Chabane. So in terms of starting the meeting, we do have a quorum to start the meeting. But to adopt the BRRR, we'll need one more member. So, but we can start with the meeting. Maybe other members will be joining in the course of the meeting.
All right. Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, Eddie. And good morning to everyone. Good morning to members from the IEC. Morning to honorable members who are present. And good morning to members of the public and members of the media. Our agenda today is as follows: opening and welcome, 2 apologies, 3 electoral laws amendments, followed by discussions. Number 4 will be, number 5 will be adoption of the BRRR. And then it will be closure. On apologies, I have received an apology from Honorable Mwela, who said he was going to join in 15 minutes' time. And I have received an apology from Honorable Lekhwaza, who said she was to join in 20 minutes' time. So I'm sure by the time we discuss the BRRR report, we'll be having sufficient members for the purposes of adoption. So having welcomed everyone, members, you'll note that we are almost towards the end of the year of 2020. And it's a year that is full of a lot of things. Top among others was the COVID-19. Today is supposed to be, or it is our last meeting for the year. So, being our last meeting, it will mean we will have to bring forward a lot of other issues that we need to do. So that we close in a proper way. I have correspondence from Honorable Kanyike, who was supposed to ask questions last week to the minister, but because she was not audible enough, she wrote those questions and sent them to me and sent them to the minister. And I want to reiterate and say that I have always requested members that whenever questions to ask to the minister, they must be asked through the central point, which is firing the chairperson and AG. But what has happened last week was an exceptional case on the basis of exceptional circumstances. That is why we have allowed those questions to be asked in the manner they were asked, and we do expect the responses swiftly, and we will make any sort of follow-ups Because the fact that we're not in a meeting the same way does not mean that the office is closed. We still continue to interact with a lot of correspondence that comes to the office. And just to remind all of us that in the matter that most of the questions arises from the matter we discussed last week of the of Bushiri and his escape. And our main resolution last week was the report provided by the minister was a preliminary report. We are waiting for a report of the cluster that will be consolidated and giving us every aspect of what constituted our question. We do await that. We have also received requests from a lot of members saying we need to call a meeting inviting certain portfolio committees. I must say that we are processing that, but we are quite sensitive to the fact that we are waiting for a meeting of the entire cluster and its reports. So we have also suggested now to the cluster and written to the cluster to say we were requesting that we go and do oversight in the affected areas as the cluster. We are waiting for necessary approvals to do so. Once Parliament has approved, we will then undertake that the oversight to the necessary areas, which is Waterkloof and OR Tambo, respectively. So once approvals are given, we will then respond as a cluster, because we don't want to deal with this matter as one component of Home Affairs. We want a holistic report that involves all other departments that are part of this cluster. So with regard to, I have received also correspondence with regard to the Constitutional Court ruling on the electoral system of the country. With regard to that matter, we are waiting for the executive to table a bill to that effect, which will be debated by Parliament. We have taken that decision not very light, because we would have easily just done a parliamentary bill. But given the nature and the complexities of the bill itself and its financial implications, we felt that the executive must be very close to it and it must be highly involved, so that Parliament does not pass a bill that the executive may be unable to fund and so on. So we've got to work together. We are indeed required by the Constitution to work together. As the legislature and the executive, we were expected to work interdependently and intertwined. So I think that's what we endeavor to do from time to time. So members, we have, in our last meeting, taken a report from the IEC, which was presented substantively by by Mr. Shibure, who is part of our meeting. And we also have Commissioner Muyebza. He is also part of this meeting. They have presented. So my expectation today is that members must engage to do. Must engage to the presentation which was made last week, which I hope all members have, and enter into a discussion on those issues. What I said last week was we did receive a lot of public comments, and at the center of everything was that we needed as members to determine whether or not the comments are sufficient that we can respond to, or must also call those people who have commented for public hearings. But from where I'm sitting, was there a few contentious points that were raised, principal of which was the Section 14. So I want us to discuss that alongside those kind of issues and its deliberation by members, and then we will next year take further last deliberation after we have determined how the deliberation must take place. So I'm generally going to allow members to speak to what was presented last week, and Mr. Shuguri and Commissioner Mayapia are here to interact with the deliberation of members. Then we'll take it from there. Welcome, Commissioner. I see the Deputy Minister Njabulo Ndzundza has joined also the meeting. Honorable Deputy Minister, you are welcome. And thank you very much for always being available to attend to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. We really appreciate your availability. And as a committee, we don't take it very light that you make time for the committee. And you respect the committee. And before I take members, can I allow you, Deputy Minister, to say something?
No, thank you, Chair. I'm sorry to disturb you. I had actually raised my hand during apologies to indicate that the minister had to go to an urgent meeting with the minister in the presidency and the minister of unemployment, Mr. Tulas Ngwesi. So he's not going to be joining this meeting. I believe a formal apology was sent, but I thought it's important that I indicate that we take this committee very seriously, and we'll always do our best to make sure that we meet the needs and work together with the committee. Thank you very much.
Now, I was recognizing you to say something about to the committee. I hear the apology, but I was recognizing you to say something. If you don't have something, just greet members.
No, for now I'm fine, Chair. I understand that majority of the issues we are dealing with are mainly responses by the IEC as well as public comments on the issues that we had already participated in as a department. Obviously, part of us being here is to make sure that there's synergy in the work that we do in terms of the executive and the work that is being done by the legislative arm, so that we keep ourselves well breasted with the intentions of the legislative arm of government. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable members, I don't see your hands. I will take your hands in the following order. Honorable Rose, number one. Honorable Lizelle, co-chair number two. Honorable Tito, number three. And then Honorable Chavani, number four. This is what I'm able to see from where I'm sitting at this point. But if I see more hands, then I will. Honorable Ross, you can shoot.
Great. Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the IEC as well for the very well-considered amendments based on the public participation and what happened. But allow me to start by congratulating Deputy Minister Nzuza on passing his recent course in governance in the economics sector. And we're looking forward to seeing the positive contributions of those studies to the Department of Home Affairs. Now, I think if we look at the Electoral the Laws Amendment Bill as it stands, it's generally an agreeable bill. And as Chairperson, you mentioned, Section 14 and Section 21 is really the main bone of contention there. And what the Democratic Alliance requested was that these clauses be removed and that we have a proper paper that is put together, positioning paper that we can all understand and that we can actually make public comments on with regard to these alternative voting mechanisms that go on. And have a public comprehensive participation process because I think it's unfair to expect the general public and the broader public to comment on something like that when they haven't really been adequately informed on what is involved. And secondly, it's also unfair on us as the committee, as legislators, because we also need to understand the full implications of this. And I think although a change has been proposed, even that, it's difficult for us to really understand the full implications of that. We have to guess it, or we have to go and look and understand what has been said in the past and try and guess what the IEC is trying to do. So, for example, we were informed that this is generally about the purpose of trying out e-voting. And then recently we're being informed that it's actually not about implementing e-voting. So I really believe that this is a reasonable request. That we say that when we plan to do alternative voting methods or something significant like that, that we need to have a proper voter education process. Because at the end of the day, whatever system gets put in place, if voters don't believe in it, then it impinges on the credibility of the whole electoral process and the acceptability of the result. Now, as much as it's tempting to debate the merits of e-voting, I think it's important to consider things like our mobile units. So we have 60 mobile units, apparently, but we're unable to deploy them because of connectivity. And it seems to have taken about a year and a half. So we have mobile units that are going out there and they're unable to connect. But even our fixed home affairs offices, I mean, Nigel was down for several days last week. Centurion was down for a couple of days. So we're looking at a proposal for some technology to be implemented and piloted, but we are currently unable to manage technology in much more traditional settings than something like an electoral process. The other point is that we've battled to get funding from Treasury, even for the new Zip-Zips. I think everybody agreed that we need the Zip-Zip machines. But it proved to be extremely difficult to just get the funding for these critical devices. And there's a number of projects now that are starting to build up that are not necessarily funded. We don't understand where the funding is going to come from. So BMA is one of them, Border Management Authority. We don't have 100% understanding that this is a fully funded mandate, and we're going from year to year trying to see how much we're going to get. We have our visa facilitation process, and now people are having to pay 1,350 rand for something that they used to do at Home Affairs. We have the one-stop border posts. You know, the department doesn't have funding for it. And so therefore, that cost is being passed on in border e-tolls to customers now. And so we have a real challenge in the department in terms of actually funding these projects. We've given 562 million rand to Treasury. And unfortunately, economic indicators are showing a drop in revenue, a drop in tax revenue. And so now what we are trying to say here is that we have this important and urgent need to implement this piloting or this pilot. And the question really is this the most important thing for us to be spending our money on at this point in time? So we want a pilot, and we want to forego an adequate process in my point of view. And I really need to understand why that very reasonable request is not an acceptable request. The feedback on the questions around that was that e-voting might take 10 years before it can reasonably implement it. That's not something that can happen next year. We know that we don't have the budget next year. We know that this is it's a long term, it's a medium to long term project. And I think we need to be concerned that even the public participation in this case, it was from people that have computers, that have internet, they're able to make their submissions electronically. And even those persons have serious and broad reservations about this. And it just shows that the public has not been properly educated about the intentions of the IEC and what is going on with these two sections in this Electoral Laws Amendment Bill. And I believe it's absolutely critical. Now, we have an International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance that really publishes guidelines for reviewing the legal framework of elections. And, you know, there's just a few things that they talk about when reviewing the legal framework and provisions for elections that need to be carefully examined. And specifically when looking at new voting technologies, they say that the legal framework must properly address the regulation of its use. So specifically procedures and requirements for the use of IT during such voting, how the counting is going to work, how the tabulation works, and this must be accurately reflected in the electoral legislation. It's not something where you drop it in general, and then all the details get covered later. You know, so things like data protection, that might be covered in additional law, but it's something that needs to be seriously and holistically considered. Then it talks about the regulations, so how these regulations can either be done in the law itself, or it can be left over to the implementing agency, or in this case it would be the IEC, to decide by regulation what happens. And what they say is that while the latter is better in terms of flexibility, it can give too much scope for election procedures to be adapted to the needs of technology instead of the other way around. So basically circumventing important safeguards if time becomes scarce that we need to implement a specific project, that we then look at what the technology is and not what the broader principle is of such a system. Then we look at the principles of secrecy, equality, universality, and transparency. And these are generally safeguarded in the constitutions of many states, including ourselves. This think tank, it says that special provisions are required to ensure that these principles are guaranteed. So at the moment, we want to implement a pilot of some sort of a system, but we don't understand on which principles, on which of these principles is it based. How will it be evaluated, and how will it be evaluated against these different criteria? And then it talks about the legal text. It must incorporate the technological processes precisely and in a way that's transparent and objective. Because we have a situation where we're going to have independent candidates. So you need to have a system or a process that is completely open, that somebody, a layman, should be able to go in and fully audit that system. And that is what we have at the moment, and it's a critical thing in terms of being able to assure that, be assured that even independents can fully participate and be able to audit such a system. And so to our point of view, there are way too many very important questions that are recognized internationally as critical things when trying to introduce these systems. And for us as members of parliament, not being informed about where we stand against all these criteria, it puts us in a very difficult position to say that we should approve such a legislation, we should approve such a provision or not, because we're not fully advised on what all the consequences are that allows us to make the relevant legislation. Because at the end of the day, we need to sacredly guard this vote. We need to absolutely guard it with everything that we have. And so we cannot take any chances with this kind of thing. This is not a technical amendment. It is a very fundamental amendment. Now, I can go on and on, but basically what we are asking for as the Democratic Alliance is that some sort of a clear indication is put forward of what is this thing. So are we implementing e-voting? Are we not implementing e-voting? When we talk about another voting method, what is it? And then secondly, on what principles are we going to look at such systems? How are we going to ensure that they're inclusive? How are we going to ensure that that they will be practical around the country? What's going to happen if a computer crashes? All of those kind of things. We need to understand this much more carefully before we spend precious money on piloting systems, because we just don't have that money. We just don't have that money to spend on something that we're going to try out. And as the idea has warned, you know, what happens in those situations is that you implement a system, and then that system, then there's a call for public comment on that system. And we lose the fact that we actually need to develop these voting methods, and that based on a mandate from the people, something that they understand, something that's going to be practical and that we agree on, that we agree that money should be spent on this, because we just don't have the money. So, Chair, my proposal, again, is that as a committee that we set aside Section 14 and 21, and we ask the IEC to please go away and facilitate this this documentation of this process, this education on this process, and then we come back and look at the legislation and how we can implement it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Ross. Honourable Lizanne.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me just start by saying that I wanted to welcome the remarks that you made at the beginning with regards to further engaging the security cluster on the issues pertaining to the bushiries and possibly even an oversight visit. I do feel very strongly that as a committee, we cannot just let the matter slip away as we normally do. Normally, we've got an rage about an issue, we get angry, we deal with issues, and then we forget about them. So I'm pleased that you, in fact, made those comments, Chairperson. For the issues at hand, I also want to thank the IEC for the great work that they've done, the presentations that they gave us last week. I would like to fully agree with the Honourable Ruth in terms of Clause 14 and 21. I also think it's not technical in nature. I think it's a much bigger issue that we must consider. The Electoral Commission in its submission actually does state that the introduction of e-voting is a national policy matter that requires the participation of the broader South African public, and that that matter must not be treated lightly and should thus be informed by proper research. And I think considering this frank admission, I think there are two issues. I don't think the adequate participation of the broader South African public nor the proper research on this issue has been done. And so therefore, I would not like to repeat everything that the Honourable Ruth said, but I think we need to therefore consider that we should go back to the drawing board. I don't think we should proceed with these changes. I think in the current economic climate as well, and the competing pressures and you know, issues that IEC must look at, I don't think we can spend this money just willy-nilly on trying to roll out a system that might not be effective in the South African context. For example, the IEC always speaks to us about their budgetary constraints, how they don't have enough money, for example, to employ enough staff in their media unit, as an example, to combat fake news, or even enough money to roll out campaigns to attract young people to vote. So I would like to agree that we for now remove those two sections, clause 14 and 21, that we park it, that we take it back for proper consultation, research, to look at whether it's suitable for the South African context, our climate, that we consult, and specifically our rural communities. But I don't think for now it is something that we should proceed with. And that is our view, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Co-Chair. Honorable Peter.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would also like to say hi to my colleagues. Chair, I will hand over to Honorable Mpinine. He will elaborate on this one. But I also Chairperson, I'm still speaking, Chair. I'm saying that I also second Honorable Ross and also Honorable Lizelle on section 21 and also section 14, especially on the public participation. There was not enough public participation, and even right now the IEC itself, it cannot even give us a proper direction in terms of the addresses of the voters. So I will also hand over to my other honorable members to say something, and then for there I'm covered. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Honorable. You don't have the right to head over unless you're now taking over to share the meeting. You can't hand over, you speak for yourself, and then Nkina is a full member, is going to be given his own opportunity by the way. So if you start to hand over, then it's a coup d'etat, Honorable Peter. Honorable Makuma.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. My apologies, it seems that I have connection problems. But I think I would like to also join some of my colleagues. I think the big issue here that stings like a bee is the clauses 14 and 21. And also, I would like us to put emphasis on the budget constraints, because that seems to be a huge problem. Especially when, you know, if it were mentioned on the pilot project. So I think the it is essential for us to have that. And I would also want to ask the Honorable Chairperson as to whether and why did the IEC not consider perhaps hybrid venues for those in specially remote control areas. It is important that we take everybody, as my colleague Honorable Ross has said, everybody on deck with this, so that everyone in this country understands the issue. And for me, the participation is important, and I think we have to go back to basics. One, that is to have a complete public participation process within this. And then also we as members of Parliament must be ensured that in terms of our budget, that there will be such to deal with these issues. But again, not that I think we would like to be funny, but I think serious consideration for clause 14 and 21 to go back and come back again and inform us what the way forward is in this regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Makrobo. Honorable Mpina. Honorable Mwena.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm handing over to you. I'm comfortable because I've just arrived now. Chair, my apologies. I'm handing over to you. Thank you.
You see, Honorable Tito, Honorable Mkina is not here, and you're handing over to him. Honorable Chaban?
Okay, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Chair, for handing over. I think the new things. Chair, I only have three issues. First, Chair, is to appreciate the responses from the IEC, detailed and clearer in terms of its articulation. and also taking the issues that were raised through public comments. I think we must do appreciate the work. I think, Chair, on the issue of the e-voting, it's clear, Chair, that the future will demand that we enter in that space of e-voting. And I partly agree with my colleagues to the effect that the challenge may be around budget allocation. And I think the IEC in many times have reflected on the budget constraints in terms of rolling out some of its program. And I think that is a fundamental point that members are raising. But in principle, Chair, that we have to also appreciate the refined amendment provision that they've now responded. In principle, we ought to consider, Chair, that noting that the future will demand this e-voting initiative. And we ought to appreciate that one of the weaknesses which I think could not have been consulted both on the rural area and urban area to the extent in terms of giving awareness to this initiative in terms of this of e-voting. But I fully agree there, Chair, that they refined because the competence of the legislation policy formulation lies with the national, it lies with the with Parliament in terms of effecting this provision. I agree with the Honourable Ross in terms of the modalities that need to be brought to the effect of the our members and how it's going to operate, its regulation, how it's going to be effected. And to some extent, Chair, the IEC may need to expose us to research details, which perhaps they might have considered around the world, in terms of the process of conducting a piloting on e-voting. What are the strengths and challenges that certain countries have faced on this matter? And what are the weaknesses they have encountered? So that when we finally consider the options that are put before us, we're able to be thorough as members of the committee, but also as members of the public, both in our rural areas in the main, because those are residents who are disadvantaged in terms of the this electronic and all the affected issues that has to be make them to access this electronic system. We know that currently our people have challenges with the data. They can't access basic modern system. So it will be important, Chair, for the IEC to also come back to take us through on the research conducted from other countries that have already in the space of electronic voting, in the face of piloting, what were the challenges identified, process that was engaged in terms of the finally considering the pilot voting. The last feature, the I fully agree on the refined provisions that suggest that when there's available resources, they can able to engage in this e-piloting. And I think it's clearer now that the this section 14 and 21 is not does not prescribe the implementation of e-voting in the next elections, but create a foundation in which IEC will able to conduct e-voting piloting. And Chairperson, I'm clearer that it may not it be say that in the period where funds are available. And in the absence of that, in the argument, Chair, is that in the absence of that provision, it says that they were unable to conduct that piloting. The period in which they may conduct must be clearer as per this responses to that to them, because it may be, for example, say if it may be approved, but moving forward in the 2 years or 3 years, there are available funds. They can able to pilot this e-voting product. But principally, Chair, is that there must be a research details from outside institution who have conducted this e-voting pilot. So in the manner that Honorable Ross raises it, we're able to consider a coherent and understanding on the final product, and our members of society, particularly in rural areas, are able to understand this process before we consider its finality. I fully agree on the revised provision, Chair, in terms of the issues. And I think, Chair, we still have to go and make consultations on the matter. Chairperson, I think it also to be important also to bring in the legal team of the Parliament, and also to interact on this matter at a particular stage, Chair, just to give us a sense of the implications when, if we take this provision in or not, if we don't take this provision. It will be important, Chair, so that that advice be guided to members of the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Chavan, Honorable Kanyin.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. I'm not sure if I'm audible. I'm having changes today again. Am I audible?
You get cut. Try to switch off your yes.
Okay, thank you. Am I audible?
Proceed, I'll let you know.
Okay. Thank you so much, and to colleagues, and greetings to representatives from the IEC. First and foremost, I'd like to reiterate what the Honourable has said.
No, you still have the challenge of last week.
Chairperson, how can we best resolve this challenge? We maybe have a different place today.
We must come to Johannesburg and attend the meeting from here. It will be easier from mid-range.
No, Chairperson, I don't know. I won't be able to do that.
It's fine. You can't proceed. I think you will have to put everything in writing. I see Makhluba is talking. Let's allow Honorable Dikota. He's also laughing that you must come this side of this, to the south. Honorable Dikota? Honorable Modise. Yeah, the system is it's quite unfriendly. Can I at this stage allow the IEC to respond? Over to you, Honorable Musutu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you, to the Minister, Deputy Minister, and to the members.
Before Mr. Msuta proceed, may I correct something, Chair? Please, with your permission.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Mr. Msuta, not Honorable Msuta. Chairperson, I wanted to correct that. Thank you.
All right. Accepted.
Thank you, Chair. And I must greet everyone that is connected to this session. We're grateful to you and the committee for the opportunities to clarify the submissions we have made. There are a number of things we have noted this morning. We note that generally the bill is considered acceptable, but there are a number of issues that are raised that we need to clarify, or we may need to clarify. And I'd like to deal with those as they were raised. I would not necessarily repeat them as raised by honourable members. We have last week submitted on the appreciation that there may have been apprehension which was unintended in relation to sections 14 and 21. As the Electoral Commission, we offered to alleviate the difficulties that may be raised therein. It is our view, we haven't heard what our revisions, whether our revisions carry persuasion or not. But our understanding is that the members of the committee would prefer that both sections 14 and 21, we consider removing them. I'll come back to that and the implications. We certainly do not wish for members of the committee and this nation later not to appreciate the challenges that we face as a commission. The second thing that I'd really want to raise is there is appreciation, I think, and we welcome that, that the bill is not about implementing electronic voting. It is, in fact, far from that. If one looks at countries that have migrated to electronic voting, they have done so following a number of years of piloting, of trial and error, and understanding and educating. That is clearly a way we believe this nation would have to follow. We have looked at what our nation has, the challenges it faces, and the difficulties we will have to deal with in the future. And we need to balance all of those to come to a proposition that we could later come back to Parliament and say, here are the proposals, this is the proposition that we make for your consideration. We are not at that point. We are at the point where we are still looking internally. We are talking to represented political parties in the party liaison committee, and we, together with them, have come this far to say we are not moving from where we are. That's the principle. But we are saying as soon as the possibilities and the means exist to begin to look at this, that's really what we needed to do. The third thing that I want to point out, Chairperson, is that when we look at electronic voting and our nation, we have been doing research, and I heard Honorable Chabane raising this matter. We have been researching this matter since the late 90s, the early 2000s, and we have, you know, updated political parties, I'm sure we would favor this portfolio committee with all of the research that we have done and the reports that we have undertaken in the past. Some members, if not all, maybe may remember that in 2012, 2013, we had an international Mbizo on this matter, which was held in Cape Town, where members of political parties, then members of the portfolio committee, were present, where we extensively looked at electronic voting and how those countries that have moved to electronic voting and those that have moved out of electronic voting, what the pros and cons were. We had people from the Netherlands who have turned back from that. We had people from Brazil and other nations who are using electronic voting. And we were well informed. And at that point, our nation took a decision that said, Electoral Commission, continue to research, but we are better served where we are currently. And that really is the spirit with which we took those discussions. But when we move forward and we look specifically at many of the challenges we have hitherto come to experience, that's why we are where we are. And I want to remind members that there were allegations. There were allegations, none of which were proven, that we have challenges with respect to our current voting methods, that persons, when they vote in national and provincial elections, it does not affect local government elections. It's in national and provincial elections. In some instances, have attempted to vote twice. Those are issues that worry us. We have heard from you as the portfolio committee that we needed to look at these things, and we submit to you that though we revise legislation or we have made proposals for your considerations, which will not affect local government elections in this respect, those are propositions worth pursuing if we are to be assisted in limiting exposure in national and provincial elections in 2024. I want to point out, Chairperson, through you, that the issues that hold true to local government elections, where people vote in the wards where they live and not anywhere else, are not issues that will arise from the difficulties that we have known from Section 24 as was submitted. And so I want to reassure you and our nation that for 2021, people strictly vote where they live, where they are in the wards where they live. They cannot vote outside of those wards. I want to submit that we as the Electoral Commission want the Portfolio Committee to take the decision that is informed. We do not have difficulty with what decision the committee will take, but we do believe that we need to inform the committee in the best possible way so that they make the best possible decision. In this respect, the issue in relation to the Constitutional Court challenge the court decision that was issued in June would or may require at a later stage that a longer ballot paper anticipating the contestation by independent candidates must be accommodated. When that happens, the complexity in managing an election, particularly voting and counting, will arise. And these are ways we are trying to, you know, to begin to prepare to deal with. We are not saying by 2024 we would have a system, but we are saying we need to understand what better ways do we have to do that. When you prepare for a long-term race, you don't prepare a night before that race. And the point I am really making here is that when we take the decision not to even pilot, we will, of necessity, delay the process of piloting by a number of years going outwards. And that is really the point we want to make. We do not hold, we would understand if Parliament said, no, we don't do, even when the means are available and so on and so forth. But we certainly accept that we cannot do so when there are no means and it is not intended to get into local government election in 2021 or to just go into 2024 without the thing having been attested. 2024 is going to require the participation of independent candidates. There are a number of ways that Parliament may come out with a process, some of which may entail more ballot papers and more complicated ways of voting. That is the anticipation we have in mind. That is the preparation that we are having in mind. And in all of that, we would work hand in glove with yourselves, with political parties, and with the election stakeholders as we would normally do. The last point that I wanted to raise, Chairperson, was that we submit to Parliament that we are satisfied with the clarity you have. We have worked extensively, as I've indicated, with electoral stakeholders in this. We have ensured that the submissions we make are indeed submitted to the chief law state advisor, that they look at this thing, and we believe that they have looked at the constitutionality of the issues that have been submitted. So we just want to assure you that nothing that we have undertaken, we have done so, with other, intentions. We have done so with our bona fides, as we will always do, and we want to serve our nation to the best of our ability as we can. I want to pause there, Chairperson, and I don't know if there's anything that I have missed out that Masego may wish to submit on, but I do welcome the views of the members. I want to thank you for the opportunity of considering this, and perhaps I should, as I close, reiterate that members of the Commission send their regards to all of you. We are in session looking at the preparations, amongst others, for local government elections, and they're involved in that session. Masego and I have taken leave of that session to be with you. Thank you very much. I don't know if you would like to offer Masego an opportunity to check on anything that we may have missed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Listen, over to you, Mr. Shibun. Can you unmute yourself?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members, and thank you, Commissioner Muyapia. I think you've dealt adequately with the issues. Just to underscore a few things, the draft responds critically to things that were raised sharply in the public comments. The first one was that it was not clear, and in it being unclear, it presupposes that we were trying to circumvent the provisions of the law as it regards to the voting procedure at the voting station. Honourable Rose has also eloquently enunciated the principles, which we reiterate, that the introduction of a pilot possibility responds to issues of inclusivity, verifiability and the equality of the vote, so that everywhere, wherever you find yourself, wherever you vote is equal as a South African. We have also redrafted the provision clauses 14 and 21 to make it clear that whatever system we put in place must still be subject to the requirement that the voter must be clearly identifiable, the voter must be registered on the voter's roll, the voter must not vote more times than they are entitled. And Chair, lastly, the pilot affords us an opportunity to learn from jurisdictions elsewhere. There's a number of countries who have gone out on procurement drives to invest in technology without first testing the technology, only to realize when they tried to implement it that the technology was ill-suited for their circumstance. And that is a very expensive lesson to learn. Thank you very much, Chair.
You did not hand over, Mr. Shibur.
Chairperson, I hand over the volume.
Okay. I must say this, that we don't doubt your bona fide in terms of whatever provisions that we're dealing with. I think whatever we believe as a community, whatever we do is in the interest of the public. We're going to interact with this matter one more time in February. But we too, like the public, are concerned about this 14 and 21, and we think we must just go look at it, refine it, and come back, present what we call some research methodology in terms of how we must get out of this, these issues. And as a committee, we are aware that the technique of decision making, the consultation, and indeed we want to consult with our people. I hear most members refer to the rural voters and so on. We're quite aware of the technique of decision making in a democratic and open society is its consultation. So let's go back with the view of refining. But if you feel strongly that the provisions as you have put them are correct, you must come and present us with the research methodology and convince the committee. The committee will still take the public's views into serious consideration. I'm sure you might have heard what the members are saying. Let's go and work around that. When you come back, let's present more superior arguments that are backed up by research and public participation. I think we can step off this item now. You may leave, because I hear you are having another meeting. So the permission is granted that you leave. The permission. Otherwise, there may be problems.
Chair, through you, I want to thank you and your members for this opportunity. I permit me to not leave any doubt. We are quite happy to have the committee, to offer to the committee that sections 14 and 21 may be removed. We are saying that we believe that when we do so, we have made our intentions known to yourselves and you're clear. We don't have. What we do request is that the portions of the amendment bill that are raising no problem will not affect, are impacting on the local government 2021. Those we are very keen and desirable to have them approved. We will always, speak to you, with our bona fides. That really was the point. We don't have any qualms. We think that we have presented the arguments. We have indicated what our thoughts were, and we wouldn't, we are not upset that Parliament would say, don't deal with this. That's not the point. I hope that we have clarified our position. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you. We are going to approve it in February, but you will still have to come back and deal with these 14 and 21 if you still feel. But it's fine. We are quite very happy that there is this working relationship that we have. So I think we will meet in February. The permission is granted. That you may leave.
They're refusing.
Can we get Adams to take us through? You will recall, members, on this item now, we have dealt with it previously, but there are elements that were brought in, and I just want Adams to take us through all those kind of elements, but we need to approve the BRRR. It's a snag that you all know that we have not received the annual report. The minister has written to the speaker requesting that we receive it later. It is in view of the fact that the Auditor General is not done with the finalization of the annual report. So as soon as it is done, it will be incorporated into these reports. So be that as it may, we may need to proceed approving it. Thank you very much. Over to you, Adams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to share the document. Yes, as the Chairperson indicated, the document has just been revised to indicate the processes of the delayed annual reports, which are reflected in the top of page 2. So basically just indicating the correspondence we've received and the process of adopting the report without the inclusion of the annual report, as is usually the case. Then going from there, the next significant additions, apart from minor edits, are the additions to page 8, which indicates the summarized adjusted strategic and annual plan of the DHA. So that's on page 8, which comes from their presentation to us. Before I included a more substantial, this is a summary from their actual revised strategic plan, but their summary is more suitable to the document. So just indicating extracts from that. So how many targets were changed in the strategic plan, how many were changed in the annual performance plan, and what those related to. So that's an overview of the strategic plan, and then extracts from their main points during that presentation. We then move on to page 11 in terms of significant changes, where we indicate the annual performance, the specific changes to the annual performance plan. And here we've also included the different changes that were implemented at the various stages of the lockdown to indicate why it is that they were not able to achieve those targets and why the targets were revised, as well as further details on the specific targets that would be changed from that presentation. And then other than that, we then move, we've then included the observations made by the members in relation to these presentations by the department and the entities. As part of the, right at the end of the document, the recommendations. So there were a certain number of recommendations. So the only additional change is then coming at the end. So we also indicated the first quarter performance and expenditure report in more detail, because that came to us subsequent to the last draft version. And also the observations from members in relation to that. So then we go to the final part of the document, which relates to the observations and recommendations. So in these, it's pretty much the 2020 recommendations, the last five or so of the recommendations, additional ones that we added from the last time I presented. And these relate to the annual performance plan. So this relates to 7.2.19 here, where we indicate that the revised APP was presented at a very difficult time when the budget of the DHA was cut by 562 million. This could be a trend that could continue in the future. The DHA should start with a risk-adjusted performance measurement. Then 7.2.20, the passports that the DHA is issuing within 13 days during lockdown are commendable. However, the challenges in the application of passports by people abroad must be resolved. Then, what is the plan for documenting refugees and asylum seekers to get the social relief grant, which is still ongoing, but will actually come to an end at the end of this month? So that's from an old meeting. So it's questionable whether we should include that, because that may or may not continue. The committee encouraged the department to fast track the targets that were greatly affected by the lockdown. The committee should support the increase of the budget of the DHA, and the DHA should table their annual report as soon as possible. So since we didn't get the revised APPs of the Electoral Commission and the Government Printing Works, there were no additional submissions on either of these entities, and the recommendations remain the same for them. So that's, in a nutshell, what we've made additions to the report, and I will hand over for members to contribute. I'll leave the document up on the screen so that you can refer to it, unless you tell me otherwise. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll take the hands in the following order. Honorable Mwela. Honorable Ruas. Honorable Tito. And then Honorable Lizan. Over to you, Honorable Mwela.
Can I humbly request your indulgence, Chair, before you go to members? There's just one issue that I think it's important we clarify even before deliberations.
No, I should have also granted you permission to leave, Honorable.
I will leave, Chair.
Yeah, I think...
Chairperson?
The permission is granted for you to leave.
Before you leave, Chair?
Okay.
Yes. Chair, are you recognizing me?
That's correct.
Chair, I'm not, I think I'm not, disagreeing with your ruling that the DM must leave. And I think that it's a principal process that we engage on. I thought if Chair, we can, you can allow him to raise a matter if it has to do with the draft report, or he raised the matter outside with you. So that you benefit to what you ought to raise, Chair. I think I'm trying to create these two options, Chair, that either he gets the release, he raises it outside with you, you bring it to our attention, or he raises it immediately and then he leaves. Because I thought it was important to benefit from what he has identified on the report. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, he can raise it outside with me because this is strictly a meeting of members around BRRR. And these are findings of the committee. This is a committee session. So I think he can leave and raise it with me outside this meeting.
Okay.
Who's chair?
It's me, it's Liesl.
You can proceed.
Okay, I'm just worried. Maybe the DM would just wanted to address us on the late submission of the annual report, because it's quite a serious matter, and even though we do understand the reason, maybe that's why he wanted to address us. So although I don't want to go against your ruling, maybe we should have...
He has left already.
Oh, okay, sorry. No problem.
Yeah, he has left already, but with regard to the annual report, Honorable Koche, it's...
No, I did read the letter, so it's fine. I was just worried about the legal implications of adopting a BRRR without having seen the annual report. But I did read your opinion on the matter this morning, so I'm happy. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Moela. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you, Chair. So firstly, thank you for this this report. I think a lot of the recommendations are pretty comprehensive. Certainly a concern from my point of view is the large number of APP items outstanding from last year. That list is getting quite long. And it's something that we really need to address as a committee. I remember there were also outstanding items on the audit reports from way back when that we started to look at initially, and then we that process seemed to stop. So we had our resolution tracking. So Chair, I'd like to urge that we put these on the resolution tracking urgently for first thing next year, that we start to get some of these resolved. I mean, some of these have a sort of a seven-day time period from the time that the BRRR was adopted. So it's quite serious that we then sit theoretically a year later and that hasn't been resolved. And then I'd also like to welcome the addition on the applications from persons overseas that is included in here. There has been a petition submitted to Parliament, but this is an extremely serious issue for these persons that are stuck overseas. Many people are now flying back to South Africa just to apply for their passport. So it's an extremely urgent issue.
Thank you. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I will also like to comment on 7.2.21 on that one of what is the plan for documenting the refugees and asylum seekers to get the social relief grant. I heard Adam saying that we must remove it because of it was only it's going to end on this month of November. So I don't understand that one. And because of we must get a chair on that one on how many refugees and asylum seekers were documented to get their social relief grant. I don't know, or maybe am I out of order or what, Chair? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Lizan.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would also like to agree that I think we need to have a resolution tracking mechanism in the new year. Maybe we should keep an Excel document and sort of, you know, keep track of some of the issues that have not been addressed. I think on the point of what is the plan for documenting refugees and asylum seekers to get a social relief grant, serving on the Portfolio Committee of Social Development, I believe that SASA has paid about 440 asylum seekers. And remember, they were paying people who are documented, who are already legitimately within the borders of South Africa as asylum seekers. So I'm wondering whether this point shouldn't just be changed to read, what is the plan with addressing the backlog in the asylum seeker application system? Because I don't think, of course, this point will not be relevant going forward as the grant will cease to exist. So I'm thinking maybe we should just change that. I was also looking at all our input here in terms of the resolutions and the committee observations. I was just a bit worried that, and maybe this is not relevant, but I'm just a bit worried that we don't speak anymore about the war on homes. Because I think the problem with homes currently is that it lacks very much a customer service orientated approach. We do speak about the Beitbridge border fence and the challenges we experience there, but I wondered whether we shouldn't include a general point with regards to the immigration system as a whole and the need for the minister to come back with a clear plan of action to address the current shortcomings in the immigration system, whether it is the lack of personnel, whether it's the breaches at the borders, specifically the corruption within the department. The other day he was on TV saying that they've managed to find some people who were selling documents in Namibia and other places. So I think the issue of corruption must also be dealt with on a point that speaks specifically about the collapse of the immigration system and the need for the minister to come up with a specific plan in this regard. I know we often speak about the Border Management Authority, but that will take years to set up. So we need a plan in the interim from this department on how they plan to close the loopholes. So I don't know if that can still be included. I mean, it specifically also speaks to the challenges we are seeing currently at Payne City and Maitland, which we visited. So those will be my only inputs for now, Chairperson.
No, thank you. It's a good contribution. I think we've got to look into some of those issues. Adams? Honorable Likota? Honorable Likota? Veteran, what are you eating now? Okay, Honorable Lekwasa.
I think the previous speakers have covered me, Chair. I am okay for now.
Thank you, Honorable Lekwasa. Who else is here? Honorable Mukwena.
Yes. Hello, Chair. Greetings to the committee as well.
Yes.
I'm going to I've been actually not receiving some documents from Braed. I think that I'm not on his group. So I will study the report as well and actually make my inputs and all of that. But I've spoken to Braed that can you please include me on the emailing list, because I get so disorganized in terms of, these issues. Even this, I had to find out what this morning we're having a meeting. I did check yesterday, and I found that, okay, it looks as if we don't have anything. But when I checked now this morning, we're having a meeting. So I've asked Braed to put me on the emailing list and make sure that he keeps every time. But I will study my report, and then I can make some submissions. I'll just send them to Braed. Thank you.
I'll make sure that you are included properly. Honorable Mudisa. Honorable Chabani.
No, thanks, Chair. The first one, I want just to ask if when is the last day of submission if we're to further correct certain things in the document, Chair. Maybe you can respond later. Chair, I think also on the capturing on the failure of the department or delay of the department to submit the annual report. In your opening, Chair, you did outline the process that the department has sent a request for the extension and was granted by the speaker. And I think it's not finding expression on this report. It's just a blatant that the report must be submitted. So I think, I'm not sure Adams will assist, but I think that note needs to be presented. Chair, the issue of the Cape Town refugees, I'm not sure whether it's accurately put in the manner it has been presented. The IEC, in terms of the recommendations, the IEC did presented options post the post the Constitutional Court judgment. And in the manner it has been crafted, it appears we recommended that they still had to come and present. It does not give effect of the process that was already engaged. I think most of the writings speaks to the future, and I'm not sure on the issues that have already been engaged, how this report is supposed to reflect, because this document is going to be presented to Parliament. If you check also, Chair, on the capturing of the trade, Africa trade, I think the on the capturing of the this Africa trade process, there's an omission of Africa on the capturing. But Chair, because of the follow up and discussion we had both with the, in particular with the government printing works, the framing of the issues to some extent does not even outline progress that we're engaged on with the government printing works. That's why I raised the first point here, that is there going to be a great period for us to make final contribution and corrections on the body outline of the report. I agree, Chair, with the co-chair on the, because if we had tracking of resolutions, this report could also outline progress on the decision we've taken and also challenges or obstacles why either Home Affairs, IEC or Government Protection Workers is not dealing with certain issues. So that if an ordinary person reads this document, that person who is not either a member of parliament, but that person able to grapple on the issues we engaged on, progress on particular matters, and failure, and what are the reasons that caused that failure. So I thought, because you raised this matter, Chair, in the last, in the when we were adopting the BRRR report, that these are some of the improvements we may need to grapple with. Chair, this tracking resolution, I'm not sure, Chair, that you have now, it appears that it's our last meeting. We're going to start next year, I assume on the, I thought, Chair, we'll have this all the resolutions of the department we've taken before we close. So that we start at least with the coherent implementation, but that critical decision we've taken, Chair, you know this issue of the problems of the EOH Treasury, which is part of the issues. We have issues with our systems now. In the during the year, we've taken it in to conduct oversight, Chair, on the fire blade there by the airport. I think I remember the committee was emphatic on the agency to conduct that oversight. And it's not finding expression on the on this day. So this tracking, which the co-chair is outlining, will take us back that these are decisions we've taken. This is a matter that we could not do. This is a department we've conducted so that it clearly outlines what we've worked for the year. And I think, Chair, I'm lobbying you, Chair, just to consider that we urgently need this tracking resolution of the department. So that it affirms also our contribution to the to this debate. This is the exit plan of Cape Town refugees. The exit plan of the Cape Town refugees, it does not find expression on this report. The details are not there. The issue of the queues, Chair, as the co-chair raises it, quite important, which is just coming out now and then. So I wanted to check, Chair, what time are we granted to, we can adopt in principle with amendment on the report and be given time to look on the issues that they were raising, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you. Honorable Modikwa. Thank you. I think we need to adopt this thing today. Now that the speakers are over, I wanted to say let's have a move of adoption of the with all the amendments. I did make mention of the fact that it is our last meeting.
Chair.
The exception.
Sorry.
Who's calling?
No, continue. Apologies, Chairperson. I wanted to make one last input, but I'll wait till you're done. Sorry about that.
Yes, make it.
No, I wanted to know whether it would be possible to insert maybe a clause, a point that says
the department must, by March 2021, table a detailed plan on how it intends fixing the challenges with regard to the implementation of our immigration laws as it pertains to the shortage of immigration inspectors, the porousness of our borders, corruption within the immigration branch, the backlog in the asylum seeker system, the reintegration or repatriation of refugees in Maitland and Paris City, and the department's inability to identify undocumented and or illegal migrants. So I wanted us to have a resolution around them coming back with a detailed plan to address all of those issues. I can email it to Adam if possible. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, it is acceptable.
Thank you.
What I was saying was that the only exceptional exception we are going to have a meeting is when this cluster report is presented, which we are following up, and or the oversight, because we have made necessary requests. So once those things are approved, they will form basis of an exception of us having to meet. But now I want to hence that move for the adoption with all the input that colleagues have made.
Chairperson, if I may present, I just made additions based on what the members have said whilst they were speaking. Just as indicated in the document, I can go through them, but I've basically captured what the members have been saying in the document.
Proceed.
Thank you, sir. Just to indicate to Honourable Lizelle, firstly, the various points that she indicated, I've captured in several different recommendations rather than one large recommendation. So for instance, I've made a submission here on the addressing issues of corruption, in particular in the immigration branch. We have, and I made a submission also on the refugees in town and they're needing to be reintegrated or repatriated as per the presented to the committee. And then there's also there is a recommendation implementation of the BMA. So I've rather than have one submission, I've got it down as several different resolutions. But we'll send this to members. I've just revised the submission on the refugees and asylum seekers getting relief grant, and such that the partners present to us on what was done on that in early 2021. I've also indicated that that the issue of long-term must be addressed by service officers. Then that the DHA must report to the committee on all outstanding recommendations and performance targets, as indicated by several members. And then in relation to Honourable Chabane's question on the annual reports, we, like I said in the beginning, we explain why it is that the DHA submitted their annual reports late, and we got the Linda and their correspondence. So here we only indicated they need to submit said reports as soon as possible, bearing in mind those limitations or those extensions that they requested that we state in the beginning of the document. We've also indicated that the IEC and the GPW should do the same. So I forgot to mention that when I presented initially. And then I included I captured the point of Anuj Bachabani about continuing the GPW's engagement on expanding its business on the African continent. I believe that's what he indicated. And then that on the issue of the Constitutional Court matter, just that the executive and I, along with the IEC, should provide final policy options to implement the court ruling. So they present, just to say that they have presented something to us, but that they haven't completed that yet, because there is a matter of time them needing to implement that before 2024. And now the timeline we presented, then they're being past that. So yeah, those are the issues I've captured in relation to what Mwembe said. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chairperson?
You are recognized?
No, Chair, I was referring to the capturing of the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. I think if you can work on that correct capture. Thank you.
Okay, then I'll take that one out.
Thank you. Any mover for adoption? Honorable Decorder? Honorable Moel. Honorable Moel.
With the amendment made, and we move for the adoption of the report.
Any second?
Yes, Chair, I second the adoption. It's Lekwase.
Thank you, Honorable Lekwase. Any dissent?
Chair?
Yes?
Chair, the Democratic Alliance, we reserve our rights on the report.
Okay. Any other hand?
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Tito?
Please also note the abstention of the economic freedom fighters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other hand? Thank you. The report is duly adopted. And then thank you, members. I think I would like to thank you very much for all the contribution. And we are going to keep in touch about the issues that I have already raised with regard to all these outstanding issues. The tracking device, we're going to make sure that we deal with it. And we will find a way of the best implementation with AD. And then,
Honorable
McGrover.
Chairperson, my apologies. I just want to check for the record as to whether we are a quorum in terms of the adoption of the
Eddie? Chairperson, I have the members. I've got Mr. Chavan, Mr. McLover, Mr. Lekota is there, he's having difficulty in speaking. I don't know what could be the problem, is yourself. And then another one is Ms. Modise van der Merwe Tito and Mr. Muelwa Lekwate. So we do have enough, we do have the quorum.
Did not count Ross.
Oh yeah, and Mr. Ross, yeah.
Okay, can Eddie come in again? Is Mr. Muela Lokwase?
No, I'm not
getting. Magruva is an alternate.
It's an alternate. I will just count because every time when I'm admitting members, I'm writing them down. So far, I see that there's Mr. Chaban is there, Mr. McClover is there, Mr. Rose is there, Chairperson is there. I know Ms. Kanyile was there, but I'm not sure now because she had a problem. Ms. Moody said she indicated that she was going to be going to defense. Van der Merwe is there. Ms. Tito is there. Mr. Lekota is there, although he's unable to speak because I'm sure there are challenges in him connecting. And Ms. Lekwase. So we needed only to have six.
I have enough.
So you confirm that we're fine?
Yeah, I'm confirming that we're fine.
All right. The report is duly adopted, colleagues. I think with those contributions and I can say if it closed the meeting.
Chair, another concern. My apologies, Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, my apologies. I ask whether we have quorum. I'm happy to hear that we have quorum. But can we say that it's duly adopted with the parties indicating that they would hold their peace in that regard?
No, it is common cause. It is common cause, Honorable McLuhan. It's on record that the EFF has decided not to participate and the DA has reserved its rights. So I think what we're comfortable with that. I think if there is no any other matter from you, Honorable McLuhan, I declare this meeting closed.
And best of the end of the year to everybody, in case we don't see each other. So best wishes to everybody from my side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm sure.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, McLuhan.
We are going to miss these jokes over Christmas.
And please include me on the emailing list, man. Why are you doing this, man? The computer
I'm saying, man. No, Ed, you are supporting this, man.
I'm going to put you on the system. But also, can you from your party? Can you make sure that you are a member of the committee legally, because I know that you said you are an alternate member, but there's nothing that came from the EFF into committee section that you're an alternate member. So if that process could start now, so that in February when you come back, you will know that
he's a member, just that he was in Brackenfeld, Eddie.
Right. So now he's allowed.
Please, can I not be sabotaged? Please, everyone, have a good festive, okay?
All right.
Peace, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoy, bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye.